Now, the court has allotted 15 minutes of oral argument for each side and 5 minutes for rebuttal. The court is ready to hear oral argument from petitioner.
May it please the court, Mr. Richard Fine and Mr. Gus Wood will bring the argument for petitioner. Mr. Fine will open.
May it please the court, my name is Rick Fine and I'm counsel for the Webb County Appraisal District and the Webb County Appraisal Review Board in this case. My partner, Randall Buck Wood, will address the court in our rebuttal. The issue before the court here is simply whether a property owner who is contesting the valuation of its property for ad valorem tax purposes must appear at the administrative hearing before the Appraisal Review Board on his protest before he can appeal their determination to district court for further review. In other words, does his failure to appear at the administrative level, whether it be in person or by affidavit, constitute a failure to exhaust administrative remedies? And the undisputed facts in this case are that the New Laredo Hotel did file a plain notice of protest bearing the necessary elements under the property tax code, challenging their value for tax year 1987. The Appraisal Review Board dutifully set that matter for a hearing and notified the hotel of that setting. The hotel failed to appear at its setting and failed to otherwise submit any evidence or affidavit giving any argument or testimony to the Review Board to consider. The Review Board issued an order denying the hotel's protest for the stated reason that the hotel failed to appear at its scheduled hearing in person, by representative, or by affidavit. The hotel filed suit to appeal this determination to district court in Webb County. The district court granted the appraisal district and the appraisal review board's motion to dismiss on the grounds that the hotel failed to exhaust its administrative remedies. The Court of Appeals reversed and remanded this case for trial, holding that the Appraisal Review Board hearing is not a mandatory step in the administrative process, but instead is merely a privilege extended to the property owner. Prior to that Court of Appeals decision, every other appellate court in the state has held that the property tax code prescribes mandatory administrative and judicial procedures, which an owner must follow, that the owner must strictly comply with those procedures at the administrative level in order to appeal for judicial review, and that the owner's failure to strictly comply constitutes a failure to exhaust administrative remedies and is grounds for dismissal of that lawsuit. And we submit that for the holding below to stand in this case, every other prior appellate decision is going to have to be overruled. And the orderly system...
Do any of those decisions require participation by the taxpayer?
Your Honor, some of those encompass it with other prerequisites. The first step in the administrative process is the filing of the notice of protest. That triggers the hearing before the review board. It's the sole purpose.
Has any case held that a taxpayer must appear at a hearing in order to exhaust the most, either this in writing or in person to preserve his appeal?
This is the first case that focuses in just on the ARB hearing.
And that is not a requirement of the statute, is it? The personal or written participation of the taxpayer in the proceeding.
Yes, Your Honor, we believe it is a requirement. Under Section 41.47, the Property Tax Code states that the Appraisal Review Board hearing a protest shall determine the protest. So the ARB has got to hear the protest before it can make a determination under Section 41.47. The hearing really is...
What about 41.45, where it says the property owner initiating the protest is entitled to an opportunity to appear, to offer evidence or argument? Sounds like it's optional to me.
Well, Your Honor, our position is that he's entitled to appear. If he doesn't appear, that's the end of his entitlement. He's not entitled to bypass that procedure and go straight to district court.
Well, where in there is the requirement? Where in the statutory scheme? Every place else I'm aware of, if you have to go to an agency somewhere, it says it.
If they weren't required to come to the hearing, Your Honor, the review board would be without any basis to act upon their protest, because the only thing the review board would have in its hands is the initial notice of protest itself. The notice of protest is the first step, and all it's required to provide under the code is identifying the owner, identifying the property, and expressing some apparent dissatisfaction with the determination of the appraisal district. It doesn't give the review board any facts. It doesn't even give the review board the owner's opinion of value. Even if the review board wanted to bend over backwards for the owner, they wouldn't know what value to put on the property. They don't know what the owner wants.
Did the review board have the price that was paid for the property before it?
No, sir, they did not.
$3 million?
No, sir, they did not. The owner, in this case, the hotel, mailed in a copy of an unsworn, unverified closing statement with their notice of protest. The code requires that if the owner's not going to appear in person at the hearing, they can submit evidence or testimony by affidavit. This was not sworn to, and there's a reason the legislature required evidence to be sworn to for the review board to consider.
Are you saying, though, that we're you would require more than just an appearance? You would require a participation. It wouldn't be enough for the taxpayer just to say, hey, I'm protesting, I'm here. He's going to have to offer some kind of evidence?
If the taxpayer is present in person, at least they could be questioned by the review board if the taxpayer makes no affirmative offer of argument or evidence. If they appear by affidavit, then they'll have to say something in the affidavit other than just...
Well, if they just say this is wrong.
At least they've made an appearance. We think at the minimum they...
Do you think that would be satisfactory, though, if they just showed up and said this is wrong and I'm here to protest?
I think something has to be done by the property owner. Yes, Your Honor. In this case, nothing was done.
But
we had nothing to go on.
Would that be, that's an appearance, but that's not necessarily participation. Are we talking about an appearance or participation?
Well, because the appeal to district court is de novo, if the owner participates, of course, they don't have a substantial evidence rule anymore, so they're not bound by any record created, and there is no record created at the review board step. So participation is important only to the extent that it's necessary for the exhaustion of administrative remedies. The doctrine of exhaustion of remedies has been developed by the appellate courts under the property tax code since the first decision rendered, Brooks v. Backus, and all the other appellate decisions have further followed that doctrine, except for the New Laredo Hotel. In the Kegarice opinion, which Justice Stevens also wrote when he was sitting on the Dallas Court of Appeals. But Kegarice held that...
If I understand Justice Hightower's question, and my concern is, if the taxpayer just mailed in an affidavit that said, I protest, signed Jones, and I swear to it, does that satisfy the exhaustion of administrative remedies that you're arguing for today?
Your Honor, I think if that's all the taxpayer said, we'd probably litigate that as a different issue to determine where you draw the line. Is that really an exhaustion? Fortunately, we've got a cleaner case here because they didn't even do that.
Well, we don't
I realize
much,
the question
we don't have a much cleaner case because I take it that they sent in a statement showing the closing cost. It just wasn't verified. If that statement had been verified, this is our closing statement.
Then
would that have been enough?
Definitely so, Your Honor. I believe so. For that matter, we don't even know if that was a closing statement that was used at a closing, because, as you know, closing statements are frequently amended, and this one even bears some handwritten changes to it.
Was there a cover letter, or did it just come in the mail all by itself in an envelope?
Your Honor, my recollection is it came in the mail with the form notice of protest.
Would you say that it was at least some evidence as to value?
If it had been sworn to, we would have taken it as such, yes, Your Honor. At least it would have given us cause to investigate. It had been sworn to as an actual closing statement used for the sale of the subject property. We would have taken it at face value, perhaps tried to look behind it. The ARB has subpoena power. They could have subpoenaed the owner or his business records to determine other important factors, such as was there below market financing, so that the consideration was really more than just the purchase price. Were there other properties, intangible assets such as accounts receivable that went into the sale of the hotel? There may have been other factors other than just the bottom line shown on the closing statement to reflect the market value, but we couldn't have even begun to ask those questions.
What kind of affidavit would you want to have it sworn to? Say, this is a closing statement that was used on such and such a date. Would that be sufficient?
I believe that certainly would have been sufficient, Your Honor. But with what they submitted.
Not certifying the truth of any of the matters there, and just say this is the closing statement.
Exactly, because what the review board was faced with instead would be as if they were receiving unsworn testimony in court. No judge or jury would honor the veracity of unsworn testimony, and that's exactly what we had here. In effect, it only was documentary evidence. I believe the legislature required this to prevent instances of tax fraud, and we have experienced that around Texas. We've got, I'm sure the court knows, of tax agents that have been tried and convicted of defrauding appraisal districts, of fabricating numbers, swearing to them no less, and if they hadn't sworn to them, they'd have never been successfully prosecuted. So if appraisal review boards are going to be required now to discard the statutory requirement of hearing only sworn testimony or evidence submitted by affidavit and take unverified evidence at face value, I believe we're opening the door to that abuse.
But
secondly,
this procedure is not for the appraisal district's benefit, is it? It's for the taxpayer's benefit. The appraisal district doesn't have the right to cross-examine these people or to... If a taxpayer simply wants to say, I protest and that's all I want to say at this hearing, that may not be enough. He may not get the relief he wants, but isn't that all he has to say?
Well, the appraisal review board does have discovery powers once a protest procedure has been initiated by the owner. It does have subpoena powers, and it can certainly question witnesses that appeared so that it can get behind the protest and find out what the underlying basis is. Otherwise, if all they have is a general protest, I protest, any action they took based on that would be arbitrary. It just wouldn't have any foundation in fact because they'd been presented with no facts. So they are given discovery powers.
Is that another section of the code?
Yes, Your Honor. That's going to be in Chapter 41. I want to say somewhere after 41.61, a sequence of statutes following that gives them those discovery powers.
I suppose this is really going outside the record, but in what proportion of the cases would you estimate that these hearings really make any difference at all?
I'd say in excess of 99% of the cases from personal experience.
Make a difference when someone shows up.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And I've practiced statewide. I'm the chair of the State Bar's Committee on Ad Valorem Taxation. I can tell you from my career's experience that far fewer than 1% of these protests go on to district court. If the owners were enabled to bypass that review board procedure, we'd have no dispute resolution. They could walk straight into court where they can recover attorney's fees with a lay-down case that they failed to present the review board.
Well, if we make clear in this case that is the statutory requirement, are we dramatically changing the way most tax boards conduct their business?
Not at all, Your Honor. You'd be upholding the way that they conduct their business and have done so since their inception.
How do these changes that were made in the hearing procedures by the legislature in 1979 support your position that an appearance of some type is mandatory?
Well, prior to the property tax code, the law in Texas was wholly inconsistent. We had at least four bodies of property tax law, one for cities, one for counties, one for school districts, and one for water districts. The statutes further allowed local governments to adopt each other's sets of statutes. Title 122, for instance, for counties, if you turn to the old city statutes and the school district statutes, they could adopt each other's titles. Nobody really knew what law governed, and all of it was optional because the property owner could lay behind the log, never appear before the old boards of equalization to protest their value, wait until they were sued for delinquent taxes, defend on the affirmative defense that they were overappraised on their property. So it was not only bad for the owners because they had no clear system to appeal, but it was also bad for local government because they had no clear source of revenue. Their revenue was in jeopardy through delinquent tax suits. The legislature has cured all that. They've given us a concise, consistent codification here. It's a system that works. It enables and requires the owner to put forth these arguments up front. If they're still dissatisfied with the review board outcome, they can appeal de novo to district court and recover attorney's fees if they prevail. None of that existed prior to the property tax code. And all we're really seeking to do is preserve the rules. We just want to know what we've done wrong so we can fix it. Thank you, Your Honor.
Any other questions? Thank you, Counsel. Court is ready to hear arguments from whoever's next.
May it please the court, Mr. Fred Austin will present argument for respondent.
May it please the court. Gentlemen, I am Craig Austin from San Antonio representing the taxpayer in this case. I think initially that it may be appropriate to deal with a temptation which every appellate court has before it. that is to simplify and diminish the dockets of the district courts by adopting a rule of law that would have the effect of throwing out perhaps 25% of the tax cases that now have the effect of cluttering those dockets. I think that is a temptation, and
you think if those people had to put their case on in front of the appraisal review board that they'd be satisfied and they wouldn't sue the district court? 25%?
I'm not sure I quite follow your question, Your Honor.
I thought your lead was that we would be tempted to reduce the burden on the district courts by 25% of the tax cases because they would be satisfied with the result at the appraisal review board level and wouldn't go to district court. If I so implied,
I misstated myself. I think they're just tempting for an appellate court to diminish the overall level of litigation by adopting a stringent rule that results in summary dismissals. And no, I'm sure the persons who were thrown out of court would not be at all happy about it, if that's your question.
You're talking then just about the cases that are pending there now that haven't gone through the system.
Yes, sir. Oh, yes.
You're saying that 25% of the cases that are appeals now in the trial courts did not go through the administrative procedure?
Well, let's put it this way. In some percentage, and I'm estimating, let's say 25, there was no personal appearance by the taxpayer.
And to take it a step further, as Judge Heck did, if you required that they go through the administrative proceedings in the past, wouldn't it reduce the burden on the trial court?
It may, or it may not. I really cannot say. I'm personally familiar not with the tax area, but with condemnation, where a similar procedure is required. The condemnee is not required to appear before this informal board. I cannot say that an appearance or a non-appearance makes much difference one way or the other. If the landowner is satisfied with his award, if he is satisfied with his tax level, he'll go forward, and if he's not, he will not.
Well, the amount of controversy is probably going to make a lot of difference.
Oh, yes, without question.
$15,000 to $20,000, well, mm-hmm. You can afford to hire a lawyer and go fight it. If you're talking about $15 to $150, you can't do it.
Yes, that's correct, Your Honor. That is correct.
Well, if a taxpayer has a legitimate protest, why didn't he present it to the appraisal review board?
Well, I think that the taxpayer in this case did present a legitimate protest. He said, we protest because these taxes are too high. We paid $3 million for it. You've assessed it at 4.6. Attached to the closing papers that say we paid $3 million. It's too high.
Well, under your interpretation of 4145, he really didn't even need to do all that, did he?
No, he did not.
Under your interpretation, all he has to do is say, I don't like it.
That's exactly right, and that's all the statute says.
And assuming that that interpretation of 4145 is correct, what purpose did it serve?
The statute requires that some cause of dissatisfaction be expressed by the taxpayer. That is all the statute requires. It is not required to be verified. It simply says that there must be some identifiable cause of dissatisfaction on the part of the taxpayer. There's no question in this complaint that our protest is adequate.
Well, that's the entire purpose of the administrative review process that's set up there in 4145, appeared to be to reduce the number of these cases that go into the trial courts?
Yes, and the legislature, if it had been its pleasure, might have improved the process by requiring a more clear statement of the cause of the taxpayer's dissatisfaction. But the legislature did not choose to do so. And I think that we have complied with the statute and have gone beyond the requirement of the statute in indicating the cause of our dissatisfaction and giving the appraisal review board a very substantial protest to determine.
What purpose is served by requiring a hearing if one of the parties doesn't have to show up for it?
The purpose that is required is that the appraisal review board may say to the chief appraiser, this taxpayer is dissatisfied with this appraisal for this reason. What is your response to this? and the chief appraiser makes his response. The statute provides that the chief appraiser shall appear before the board. The taxpayer may appear.
Yeah, what purpose does it serve if all he's got is, I don't like it?
Very little if that's all the taxpayer said. But in this case, we said a good deal more. We said we don't like it because we paid $3 million and you've assessed it to $4.8
million.
Virtually all evidence before an informal board of this character is hearsay. There is no requirement that the rules of evidence apply any more than there is in a condemnation case. Please keep in mind, we're not talking about review under the substantial evidence rule. We're not talking about an appearance before the Railroad Commission or the Public Utility Commission. We're talking about an informal board of three laymen appointed at large from the community. No record is kept. The proceedings are extremely informal. Anything can go and often does. So the fact that in a true situation where you have de novo review, not review under the substantial evidence rule, but de novo review, the evidence below is irrelevant. It's all superseded by the filing of the district court suit anyway. And whether he's sworn or unsworn is irrelevant.
In 4145, it does talk about you may offer affidavits. It doesn't say anything about unsworn testimony or just bringing some papers up there for him to look at.
Yes, that's right. He may offer.
Does the statute mean that, or is it just a surface?
Well, first of all, it says he is entitled to an opportunity to offer evidence. Entitled to an opportunity to offer evidence.
Well, I read that a minute ago, but I'm reading on further now, mm-hmm. where it talks about the may offer evidence or argument by affidavit and so forth.
Yes, he may. He may do that if he elects to appear. But first of all, you've got to get over the threshold question of is he required to appear. If he does appear, then he may offer evidence by affidavit, or if he wants to, I suppose he can make an unsworn statement. Whatever the board will permit. And that is strictly within the discretion of the board. There is no requirement in the board, in the statute, or in any other statute that I know of with a true de novo review that requires that the rules of evidence be complied with.
Do you agree as a general matter that the taxpayer must exhaust his administrative remedies before he is entitled to proceed in the courts?
I agree with that general proposition, provided that the legislature makes the requirement, yes.
Your argument is there's no requirement beyond whatever the legislature has said.
Yes, precisely. One thing I think that we need to keep in mind is that this is a body of law that is most commonly read by laymen. These statutes are printed up in little pamphlets and passed out in courthouses throughout the state. And when a layman picks up that pamphlet and says, and the law says, you are entitled to an opportunity to appear, I don't think that the layman is as sophisticated as we are. And he says an opportunity to appear is just that. It is not a command to appear. And there is no penalty to attach for his failure to appear.
We're not dealing here with a nickel and dime transaction. We're dealing here with a $3 million transaction.
Yes.
I'm assuming lawyers were involved.
You're assuming what, sir?
Assuming the lawyers were involved at some point.
Lawyers were not involved at the point in time at which you were talking about. Laymen were involved at the point of time at which this occurred. I was not hired until the time came to file a suit in district court.
Perhaps that's part of the problem.
Probably is.
Is an order that is entered after a no-show the one that is determining a protest under Section 4201?
It was in this case, yes. Yes. Please keep in mind that the statute says that the board will determine the protest, that is the written protest which we properly filed. That's the only thing that's determined. It does not determine the evidence that's presented by affidavit or by personal appearance.
But your contention is all you've got to do is say, I protest, mail that to the folks, and from that point on, they turn him down because he doesn't put on any evidence, and then he can go straight to court and have it determined by the jury.
That's all the legislature required of him, Your Honor. That's all the legislature required. And we may have a quarrel with the wisdom of the legislature not requiring more, but it did not. And And now we are having the taxing authorities asking the Supreme Court to engraft a judicial requirement that is not within the statute itself.
As a matter of public policy, are most of these hearings legal, or do they, the 99% of them, as your public counsel suggested, lead to some further consideration or resolution?
Well, I will not pretend to have the experience with this that opposing counsel has. I'm basically a condemnation lawyer, not a tax lawyer, but yeah, you know, a lot of taxpayers do get relief out of this board. They do. And it's it is a meaningful step that cannot and should not be avoided. My experience with the de novo procedure in condemnation cases is that quite often that will satisfy the landowner if he gets more money out of it. Nevertheless, the inquiry seems wide of the mark simply because what we are talking about is the express requirement that is put upon the taxpayer by the legislature and not about judicial expediency or about our redrawing or our rethinking the statute as it is written.
Well, he may just be mad on the day and send a note and gets no relief and then decides, well, he really won't appeal that on the bench scene.
Yes, sir, he could do that, and he has that latitude within the statute.
But $3 million in the body, I'd like to just do that.
No, no, I think that a $3 million case with a $1.6 million error in it is substantial. Very substantial. Let me point out that the prior law on this is very clear. The landowner, the taxpayer, did not have to appear. And this is one of those codifications, if you'll remember, where the codification law says that no substantive intent, there is no intent to substantively change the tax law by the enactment of this codification. If you change a prior statutory exemption of appearance, an express exemption that he does not have to appear, into just the opposite, I think that the legislature would have had to have done this with mandatory language, not by the precatory language that it employed. And I think you've got to look back at the prior law, which is intended to be carried forward into the codification, and see if there is a definitive intent on the part of the legislature to change an exemption from appearance into a requirement for appearance, which is what we're talking about in this case. Likewise, the legislature used may, when it said that the taxpayer may appear and the taxing authorities may appear. And it used shall when it said that the chief appraiser shall appear. And I think that that distinction is crucial. And one thing that you might consider in this is that the taxing authority may appear, the taxpayer may appear. Is the court prepared to hold that if a taxing authority doesn't appear, that they can be dismissed and thrown out and the taxes will not have to be paid because the taxing authority did not appear? And the requirement is precisely the same for the taxpayer as for the taxing authority. Either may appear.
Well, we've got to presume, don't we, that the law doesn't require a useless thing. I'm sure the legislature would not the statute requiring a useless thing.
Well,
something by it.
Your Honor, it seems to me that in an administrative proceeding of this informality, there are a lot of factors that you've got to take into account. You may be a citizen of a small town, and your three worst enemies are on that board. And you may not wish to appear before that board because you know you're not going to get any relief. And these are not paid judicial officers. They're not paid administrative officers. They're three people, basically, who are plucked off the streets, who are friends of the person who appoints them. Very informal proceeding. And sometimes it may be useless, and sometimes it may not be useless. I think that depends upon the situation that exists under the circumstances.
There's no salary attached to this on
it? I'm not sure about that now that I've said it. there may be some compensation for serving in this. I'll bet there is now that I think about it.
Would it vary in the urban areas as opposed? Would it vary in Houston from Linton, or is it the same?
That would be a question that you should probably address to my adversaries over here, because they know a lot more about that than I do.
Thank you,
Your Honor.
May it please the court, my name is
Buck. What is your response to Mr. Austin's statement about the predecessor statute?
Well, the interesting part about the predecessor statute is that the predecessor statute didn't even require you to go at all in order to litigate your controversy. You didn't even have to go to the Board of Equalization. You could wait around until you were sued for delinquent taxes, and then you could defend on the basis that the value was excessive. And that was the problem under the old system, is that people didn't go to the Boards of Equalization. Frankly, the Boards of Equalization in many cases were the Commissioner's Court that set the tax rate, or other types of bodies that frankly didn't function very much. I don't know, it wasn't that many years ago until the Board of Equalizations weren't attended at all. You wouldn't see many protestants up there at all, because what they did was they waited around behind the lawn, filed and waited until the delinquent tax lawsuit was filed. Then they depended on the basis of excessive valuation. That was exactly what the Pivotal-Jones bill was intended to stop, and it was successful. This process, we can bog down in details here, this administrative process set up under this bill has worked. It has worked beyond any of our expectations. We resolved almost all of these disputes at the ARB level. Now, admittedly, some people don't get relief and they still don't go to court, but we get so few lawsuits after these administrative processes that you have to believe that it is working far beyond anything we ever expected. What the hotel is asking here is plain and simple, and that is for this court to emasculate this process.
Where in the language do you see a requirement that would put anybody on notice that they have to go to the board?
I think everybody's been on notice, Your Honor. This is the first case. This act has been in effect since 1982. This is the first case where someone has attempted to claim that we do not need to do anything other than write you a note saying we are apparently dissatisfied, and that's the language of the statute. We are apparently dissatisfied with the action of the appraisal district.
We don't know if this is the first case that happened or the first case that the district moved to dismiss.
Oh, we have dismissed them, a number of them. And this is the first case that's ever come up on appeal. I don't know of another case, and I think that's just the reason we're here. There hadn't been another case. The public understands that they have got a administrative process to attend to, and they attend to it in overwhelming numbers. There is no process left. If the legislative scheme, and the court here should look to the overall legislative scheme to determine what is required here. And it also should hearken back just the general rule. There is an administrative process here that's intended to be used. And what the hotel is saying is, don't need to use it. No one needs to use it.
If he had attached an affidavit to that closing statement, would that have been a sufficient appearance?
If the statute says if you're going to present evidence, you've got to present it either in person, by representative, and it's all got to be sworn, or by affidavit. I think we can bog down in the details. Yes, the answer is the legislature has made it fairly minimal of what you've got to do. You've got to, if you want to put in some evidence, you can put it in by affidavit. That's pretty minimal, but it is still extremely important. Let me give you just a quick example. A tax property owner has got an easement on his property. We miss those easements. They happen. Sometimes those easements are pipelines, and sometimes they take a tremendous amount of value off the property. I mean, the property ends up being worth much less than it would otherwise. Those things happen with the appraisal districts. They're not perfect. They're doing mass appraisals. I'm a lawyer. I get that case. I say, send them a little letter saying you're dissatisfied. Don't go down there and talk to them. Don't ever tell them that easement's there. We'll go hooking to court, and I'll make quite a bit of attorney's fees on this case. And believe me, there are lots of attorneys in this business. I'm one of them, but there are people on the other side. There are cases where it would be much more profitable to, quote, litigate that case than it would be to take it down to the appraisal review board, and they say, what's your problem? I said, well, I've got a pipeline over here on this property, and you missed it. And they say, well, that makes all the difference in the world. And that happens. It happens hundreds or thousands of times in this process across the state. There are probably from 500,000 to 1,000,000 protests filed each year. They're resolved in this process. If this court says, don't need to worry about that, the general rule that you need to exhaust your administrative remedies doesn't exist here, this process will be emasculated. Now, most people will still go because they don't want to go to court. But a lot more cases will filter into the courthouse that would have been resolved if the property owner had simply turned up so you could ask him a question or her a question. What's your problem? What is the problem here? And if they turn up and just, I'm not saying that anybody's going to turn up and say, well, I'm mad and I'm not going to tell you what my problem is. People don't act that way. They turn up and you say, what is your problem? And they get it resolved. And they get it resolved and as we said, most of the cases, it's not in the record, but in Travis County we had 52,000 protests in 1988 and we had 63 lawsuits. Most of them get resolved. As far as the evidence that was presented in this case,
you're out of time. Somebody will ask you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was looking at the green and didn't see my red. I'm sorry.
Just let me ask you one more. Your opposing counsel suggested that maybe a fourth of the appeals that are in the district court right now would be thrown out if we had to adopt this requirement of exhaustive administrative remedy.
We have dismissed some cases, a few cases, because of failure to appear, but we represent 12 or 13 appraisal districts, and that is a fairly rare occurrence.
You say dismissed, and you mean you've had a district court dismissal?
I said there have been a few dismissals, and we've been representing appraisal districts since 1982. We have dismissed some, but I would say you're probably talking about, we haven't dismissed a single one in Travis County in 2 years on this basis.
To your knowledge, are there any other cases on appeal on this issue of being dismissed?
No, not that I know of.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
That concludes the argument of the second call, and the court will take another recess.